You're listening to the Eye on Wales podcast. You can hear the programme live each Sunday lunchtime at 12:30 on BBC Radio Wales. This week's edition explores the help available to prevent paedophiles from offending and includes material that some listeners may find disturbing.
You aren't supposed to feel sexually attracted to children. It's not the way things are supposed to work. And it's not what I would have wanted for me or anybody else.
Chris classes himself as a paedophile. He's never harmed a child and he never wants to. But it's hard to be open when you're in Chris's situation. And it's even harder to find help.
We really need to find a way to change society's attitude. The more we vilify them, the more we push this underground.
The public have to be part of the answer, and a public discussion and a public clarity about these problems and about how to address them needs to be achieved.
This has happened since the beginning of time, I'm sure of it, and I'm sure it will carry on. What we're trying to do is try and stop the tide from coming in any further and push it back.
That tide seems to be coming in at a rapid pace.
Police say they will continue to look for any other victims of paedophile rock singer Ian Watkins. The 36-year-old lost profit singer from Pontypridd admitted a series of...
Police in Mid Wales have charged a local man with the murder of the missing 5-year-old girl, April Jones. Mark Bridger, who's 46, is also accused...
More than a dozen official reports on sex abuse by Jimmy Savile have found that he assaulted more than 170 people at 41 NHS hospitals over a period spanning more than 5 decades.
Since the revelation of Jimmy Savile's abuse of children and young people, hardly a week goes by without some mention of the sexual abuse of children. But if you're a paedophile and you don't want to offend, what help is there? I'm Kayleigh Thomas. In this week's Eye on Wales, I talk to Chris to find out how he eventually got help and what else is out there to prevent paedophiles from offending and causing misery in their wake. Chris's name has been changed to protect his identity.
For me personally, it was an overwhelming feeling of not wanting to feel the way I was, if that makes sense.
Throughout Chris's teenage years, he had a gradual dawning that something wasn't right. By his early 20s, he'd realised what was wrong.
I was very conscious that the way I felt wasn't something that I wanted to feel. It wasn't right, in inverted commas. You know, it came to be a very overwhelming feeling of... blaming myself, not understanding why I felt that way, not wanting to feel that way, but at the same time not being able necessarily to do anything about it and not understanding enough about how I was feeling to be able to do anything about it.
To get an understanding of what this attraction to children actually involves, how did it sort of manifest itself for you then?
The way that I explain it to people and the way that I've experienced it myself is, if you imagine we all on a day-to-day basis come across people who we, in inverted commas, like, who we feel some sort of attraction towards, I would experience the same kinds of feelings towards, in my particular case, teenage boys, is what we're talking about. And, you know, for me, it's the seeing somebody that is attractive to you and feeling the physical sexual attraction to that person. That's a feeling that everybody's familiar with, whatever their sexual preference. It just so happens that for me, I experience those feelings towards people who are younger than perhaps other people would feel the same thing.
And in... sort of satisfying those feelings to a certain degree, mm-hmm. Chris, were you seeking to put yourself in situations where you might encounter teenage boys? Were you looking things up on the internet?
I was actually the opposite to a certain extent. I was very much seeking not to put myself in positions where I was going to encounter teenage boys so that I didn't experience those feelings as much, because they weren't something that I wanted to feel, if that makes sense. In terms of the internet, I think to a certain extent it was through looking things up online that I came to understand a lot more about my sexuality. So in that sense, the internet was quite helpful to me in the beginning of that process of understanding, which is great. It did unfortunately also mean that it was very easy to fall into the trap of And we're not talking about anything explicit or anything pornographic, but just seeing photos of individuals who I found attractive, it was very easy, it would have been very easy to fall into the position of using those to satisfy the sexual urges. You know, I was conscious that it wasn't something I wanted to be doing, but it wasn't something necessarily that I knew how to stop doing.
So what exactly is a paedophile? It's a term loosely used. So to get the psychological definition, I visited Professor Robert Snowden, who's an expert in forensic psychology at Cardiff University.
Definition of a paedophile to the psychologist is a person who is predominantly attracted to children who are prepubescent.
And is the public understanding of that term the reality? Because a lot of people will associate a paedophile immediately with someone who is a sexual offender. Do the two go together?
No, the two don't go together. Most, what we would call child molesters, which is people who have committed a crime against a child, are not paedophiles. They commit those crimes for a variety of reasons. One might be the simple availability of the victim, easy to get at a children, easy to persuade. So it's often done despite the fact that the person is a child rather than because the person is a child. Some people simply have are sexually attracted to, if you like, younger women. Let's say they're post-pubescent, age, let's say, 12 to 16, and they find that sexually attractive, and we'd call that hebephilic. So that, again, is a genuine sexual attraction. So we don't really equate paedophilia and child molestation as the same. Paedophilia is the sexual attraction, child molestation is the offence.
How do we get society to understand the difference then?
Well, we all have sexual attractions, or most of us have sexual attractions. So just because you're sexually attracted to a woman, say, doesn't mean you go and sexually molest that woman. The same way a person could be sexually attracted to children, but doesn't commit a crime against them.
And can someone be a paedophile and have these thoughts or, you know, be attracted to prepubescent children, but not act on those thoughts and not do anything about it and function sort of normally in society with that in the sort of background?
Yes. We all, I'm sure, have urges to do things which are illegal, and it doesn't mean we do them. Just because I want £1 million doesn't mean I break into a bank and take £1 million. It seems perfectly feasible that a person could be attracted to a child, but know it's wrong, know that that would harm the child, and certainly therefore choose not to do so. The big question is always, can we change their sexual preferences? I think it's fair to say there is no technique we know of so far that can change anybody's sexual interests and sexual preferences. So it really is more about teaching coping strategies and managing strategies rather than being able to cure, i.e. get rid of, the paedophilic urges or thoughts in the first place.
So you would say categorically you can't cure a paedophile?
I would say we've no evidence in the scientific literature that we can cure paedophilia.
For Chris, the way he felt was starting to take a toll on his life.
I'd become quite depressed, I'd become quite isolated, bluntly. You know, I'd got myself into a thought process whereby I was blaming myself for what I was feeling, which was daft because you can't help feeling whatever you feel, you know. But I was blaming myself. I'd got myself into a situation mentally where, well, I'm rubbish, so why bother? Other people will think bad of me as well. And there was a period of time where I felt that I wanted to harm myself. I felt that I wanted to take my own life at one point, and that's not fun. And, you know, it was when I got to that point that I sort of realised that actually I'm going to have to do something about this, and however hard talking about it might be, it's going to be the only way that I'm going to get through this at all.
So there was the realisation that you'd reached a point in your life where you needed to seek help. Who did you turn to then?
I actually went and spoke to my GP, my doctor, initially, because he is somebody, I mean, he's been my doctor since I was a little tot. He's somebody that I've known for years and years. He was very supportive, even though he didn't necessarily know where to go with it, where to go next and what to do with it. He was very helpful because he took the time to listen and understand what I was saying without being very judgmental about it. And, you know, he made it very clear that his job was to try and help me rather than to judge me, and that was what I needed at the time. And we had a real struggle finding anything at all. There was nobody within the NHS who was able to offer any services at all. The only provision that was available within sort of the entire region where I live was provision for people who'd already been arrested and convicted of some sort of offence involving children, which obviously in my position is unhelpful, to say the very least, because, you know, part of the whole reason why I was seeking this help and this treatment was that that was the last position I ever wanted to end up in. And it was only really when we resorted to simply Googling what we were looking for, that we came across an organisation called StopSo, which is based down in South Wales.
Hello, StopSo, can I help you? Yes, you're onto the right organisation. Yes, we work with anyone who feels that they're at risk of sex offending or re-offending. What we're really wanting to do is not only to stop the second offence, but at StopSo we're wanting to stop the first offence. How long have you been dealing with this? How long has this been happening?
My name is Juliet Grayson and I'm based in South Wales, and I've set up with some colleagues an organisation called StopSo, which is the specialist treatment organisation for the prevention of sexual offending. And we have a UK-wide reach, so we're basically acting like an agency connecting anyone who is concerned about their sexual behaviour with a therapist who is trained and willing to work with them.
And it is a controversial area, Juliet. Why did you feel passionately that this was, that StopSo was something that was very much needed?
I think it was people coming to me asking for help who had come close to crossing a line or were concerned about their behaviour. And I just saw that there was a major problem and they had nowhere to turn to. And I felt for them. I felt for the struggle of being shunned and repulsed by society, and saw how depressed and suicidal and challenged they were feeling, particularly when they were trying to get help. And all the people that we work with at StopSo are approaching us asking for help to stop. So it seems daft to me that we shouldn't be offering that, and that in society the only chance they get to get some help is to be convicted of a crime, and then they might get onto a sex offenders treatment program. And I thought, let's do something before that. Rather than working with people who've been sexually abused, let's stop the abuse, let's go upstream, stop the people from offending and acting out, or at least reduce it, and then that will mean there'll be less people who've been sexually abused, and that makes less victims. And that has to be better for the whole of society, both on a on an emotional level, on a practical level, on a financial level.
So how exactly does StopSo operate then?
We work with all kinds of sex offenders. So we work with everyone from someone looking at child pornography, someone having a contact offence with a child, flashers, voyeurs, rapists. We'll work with everybody. When someone approaches us, we talk to them and to see what the issue is, what the level of severity is, what the level of frequency of acting out is, and then we assess which would be the therapist who's nearest to them that would be the best fit for them. So we're relating the experience of the therapist with the severity of the crime.
Although Chris says he's never looked at child pornography, thousands of people in the UK are straying over the legal line. In 2013, it was estimated that 50,000 people in the UK shared and downloaded sexualised images of children. That's a figure taken from the National Crime Agency, and it doesn't take into account the numbers browsing the open web and the dark web. It's a figure that the Child Protection Agency, the Lucy Faithfull Foundation, are determined to tackle. Last month, they released a series of online films.
In the back of my mind, I always thought that one day I would get that knock on the door. And I did. 7 o'clock in the morning.
If you don't think there are consequences to what you're doing, please think again, because the consequences to you, to your family, to your livelihood, for the rest of your life could be severe if you not only do this behaviour, but you come to attention for doing it.
Donald Findlater is the Director of Research and Development at the Lucy Faithfull Foundation and has been heavily involved in setting up their prevention campaign and helpline, Stop It Now.
The need to launch the film simply responds to the scale of the problem of child pornography use across the UK and Ireland. We know that tens of thousands of adults, mostly in the UK, are accessing child pornography online every month. But the quantities of people that are getting arrested for that behaviour are far smaller than that 50, 60, 70,000 that the police might talk about. So given the scale of that, and given that we know children are sexually harmed to feed that demand for those online kind of sexual images of child abuse, then we want to kill that demand as quickly and as soon and as hard as we can. And having worked with in this area, worked on the helpline, but worked face to face with many men arrested for child pornography offences, what we've learned from them over the years is that many of them were troubled by their behaviour, but they didn't know how to stop. They didn't have the personal resolve to stop. But also some of them were less clear that really there was any victims involved here, or were less clear about where the legal line was drawn. I was looking at images of teenagers. They were available online freely. I didn't have to go to any special place to find them. Why are they illegal? So in that muddled thinking, in the thought that children aren't harmed, but also in the scale of the problem and some men struggling with their behaviour online, we decided that we have to get some clear messages out there that clarify the law. Any sexual image of anyone under the age of 18 is illegal. So be clear, there's a line that says 18 years and below is illegal. But also be clear that whatever's going on in the images, children are profoundly harmed in the creation of these images. This is not a victimless crime. So please don't persuade yourself that it is. And if you are troubled by what your behaviour online and you're struggling to stop, help is available to stop, and you can get that help confidentially and anonymously. It's available freely over the telephone, and we have some additional online resources.
And you mentioned one of the films that you put together is looking to clarify the law. I mean, how much of a problem is it that people may think that what they're doing is on the right side of the law? And is that down to ignorance, or is it down to them being deceptive, effectively?
I don't believe that there's been enough clarity issued by any government department or indeed any police force that clarifies to every member of the public, including school children, including parents of teenagers, that sexual images of anyone under the age of 18 are illegal. Children, yes, can consent to sexual behaviour at the age of 16, but images under the age of 18 are illegal. So we need everyone to be very clear about that. We also need to be clear that you don't have to go to very special places to find it. Many of the men, probably 70, 80% of the 1,300 or 1,400 men we've worked with face-to-face over the last 5 years in our group work programmes for child pornography offenders, many of those men saying, look, I didn't know when I'd crossed the line. I got access to this material through file-sharing sites or through looking at adult sexual material online and just followed some links from those adult pages. I didn't realise there was a legal line that I'd crossed until after I'd crossed it, and then by then it was too late.
Mark Bridger, who was being questioned by police about the disappearance of 5-year-old April Jones in mid-Wales, has been charged with her abduction and murder.
3 years after this horrific event, April Jones's parents, Coral and Paul, are trying to make sense of what happened. They're now campaigning for more awareness and more prevention.
It was hard to think a local person did it, because people we've spoken to thought Wales was a safe place until this happened. It is still a safe place. I mean, everybody closes in, everybody helps you out. But it's even harder to think it wasn't a stranger. If it was a stranger, I think you'd mentally feel a bit better. You'd mentally think, oh my God, somebody outside came into our lovely place and took a child. But when it's a stranger, when it's a person you know, it really knocks you down and you don't know who to trust.
Before April went missing, we haven't got a clue that to be truthful, there was paedophiles out there. You know they exist and stuff, but you didn't realise that was another country, that was somewhere else. But no, we are proof that it was on our doorstep.
At one time, I wanted to put them all in jail. And you know, that's it. They're thinking about it, they've done the crime, or they think of doing the crime, that's it, put them away. But then if you can help them and give them a chance to prove that they're not bad, then yes, I have said now they need help.
Prevention has got to be the first thing we've got to try, and it's the easiest thing to do. The actual hardest thing to do is stopping a paedophile online who's looking through images and stuff like that. So to prevent somebody from going to this stage is the easiest thing to do and probably the cheapest thing. I think everybody should talk about this subject. The more people talk about this subject, the more they'll get into it and find just how big a subject is. This should be a national debate, I reckon.
For Juliet Grayson of Stop So, it's a debate she's ready to take on. Her mission to provide therapy for both non-offending paedophiles and all types of sex offenders was helped in part by funding from a local police force.
We were given some money by Gwent Police and Crime Commissioners Fund in 2014. They gave us £5,500. Most of that was to pay for therapists to be trained. So they were really sensible. What they did was they said, take this money, train therapists up so that we will have an ongoing resource in Gwent of therapists who know how to do this work.
How many are actually coming forward to you at Stop So then?
We've been seeing clients since about 2013, the middle of 2013, and we've seen about 120 clients across the whole of the UK, and about 18 of those will have been in Wales. We've had people right the way through, from judges, doctors and teachers, through to people with learning difficulties who are on social security. In terms of therapists, across the whole of the UK, we've got 127 therapists who are trained or training and almost ready to go. And in Wales, we've got 23 therapists. So that's great. We've got a high proportion of therapists in Wales. And I think that's because of the funding that we were given by the Gwent Police and Crime Commissioners Fund, which allowed us to train up therapists in Gwent. And so we've got more people coming forward asking for help who haven't yet come to the attention of the authorities. And this has to be a really, really positive thing.
And of those who perhaps come to you for 12 weeks and then feel like whatever issues they've had have been resolved, is there any follow-up? Is there any way that you keep in touch with them or sort of monitor their behaviour at all?
At the moment, Stop So is in the process of setting that up. So we haven't done follow-up with people so far, but we are in the process of setting up those procedures to be able to follow up.
Until those procedures are in place, it's difficult to prove that Stop So works. Gathering such evidence is a problem that all organisations in this field face, but it's crucial to securing funding. The Gwent Police and Crime Commissioner's Office told Eye on Wales they need such evidence before they put further funds into Stop So. Certainly for Chris, the moment he picked up the phone to Stop So proved to be a turning point.
There's an old saying, isn't there, about a problem shared being a problem halved. And I think, you know, just knowing that there is an organisation there or even a single person there, just knowing that that person is there, those people are there, even before you've actually had the conversation with them, is a very important thing. It certainly, for me, did a lot to sort of get over the feelings of isolation and loneliness that I was having at the time. So, yeah, definitely, it was a very important moment.
And how did the therapy from Stop So work then? Presumably you got in touch with them, they then put mm-hmm. you in touch with a therapist in your area. What sort of happened
That's
next
right.
then?
Yeah, I got in touch with Stop So and they put me in touch with somebody locally. And for me, the therapy was very much based around cognitive behavioural therapy, CBT. It's a question of being able to come to terms with the fact that, and being able to understand the fact that nobody can change their own sexuality. Just as somebody who is straight, somebody who's gay is gay, somebody who finds himself in the position that I did of feeling sexually attracted to children can't change that. That's part and parcel of who you are. So the only way of dealing with it was for me to be able to recognise those feelings and acknowledge them, but at the same time, not beat myself up about it. It was just a feeling. I didn't have to act on it. I didn't have to engage with it and do anything about it. I could just acknowledge the fact that I felt that way and go, okay, fine, what am I going to do next? You know, and not ignore it, but be able to acknowledge it without it having a big impact on me. None of the work that we did in therapy was rocket science. None of it was difficult. What made the difference was having somebody there who knew the right questions to ask and who knew the way to sort of navigate through this minefield of different things.
And Chris, those images that you were looking at on the internet, you say they were, you know, innocuous ones of mm-hmm. teenage boys. Clearly you don't seek that out anymore, but those sure. images presumably are sort of indelibly printed on your memory. Do they ever yeah. sort of come to the fore, and how do you manage that?
For me personally, you know, I think the hardest time when things have a habit of sort of popping into your head is, you know, at the end of the day when you're lying in bed twiddling your thumbs wanting to go to sleep. It's that kind of time when things have a habit of popping into your head. Or when you're sat on a long train journey or whatever, and you know, you just allow your mind to wander off onto whatever. Those are the moments when I you know, when I can use the knowledge that I've got and the skills that I've learnt to help myself.
Although Chris now has these skills, this is something he'll have to manage throughout his life, and there may be stumbling blocks along the way. Forensic psychologist Professor Robert Snowden is an expert in conducting risk assessments of sexual offenders.
We have a range of known risk factors which we look at. This would include things like the use of drug and alcohol. It would look at their relationship, so clearly a person in a secure relationship is less likely to offend than a person in an insecure or no relationship. We would look at employment records. We would look at general criminality, so if they're committing other crimes, this shows that they're willing to commit crimes or more likely to commit crimes. We would look at their ability to follow rules, so if we put things in place to try and stop them, are they able to respond to that? We'd look at how well they adhere to treatment regimes or medication regimes that are designed to stop them. And we'd look at their general attitude to actually wanting to desist in these types of crime.
There is a feeling of sort of there but for the grace of God, you know, that I'm very, very glad that I was able to get the help and the support that I needed when I did, and I'm not one of those people in those press stories.
I feel very proud to be able to help people like that and just make sure that we don't have new victims created, and that someone like Chris, who wants help and is motivated to get help, gets the help that he needs.
It sounds very cheesy to say it's changed my life. It genuinely has.